The gap in the final minute, center Mike Tisdale expressed the team's disappointment.
Yeah, obviously, you know, we're disappointed. We wanted to go back to New York. We didn't make it. You know, I feel bad for the seniors. They gave everything they had with great attitudes. And, you know, it's just hopefully we wake up and you know, realize what we got to do for next year.
Dimitri McKamey led the Illini with 13 points and 10 assists. The Illini women are in the Sweet 16 of the WNIT. Tonight, the women take on Missouri State in Springfield, Missouri. Tonight's NCAA men's basketball games are being played in Syracuse, New York, and Salt Lake City in the East Regional. Play in the Carrier Dome, the opening game, has West Virginia playing Washington, the top-seeded Kentucky going against Ivy League champ Cornell in the nightcap. The first game in the West Regional play in Salt Lake City will have Syracuse playing Butler with Kansas State against Xavier in the second games. St. Louis manager Tony La Russa hopes Cardinals catcher Yadier Molina will still be ready for opening day despite a right oblique injury. La Russa said today that Molina will likely sit out the rest of spring training. The team expects to know more tomorrow. Molina was hurt sliding into second base on a double during the second inning against Baltimore yesterday. He was an All-Star and Gold Glove winner in 2009. Jason LaRue is scheduled to start today against the Mets. That's a look at sports.
When we were at the Sweet Corn Festival, we brought health and wellness to the community. Everybody knows exercise is good for them, but if we can make it easier for people to be active, then they're more likely to do it. The goal of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District is to get the community well and keep the community healthy. We had been involved with WIL with the Healthy Habits program, but beyond that, we were kind of doing things separately in terms of, you know, educating the community, encouraging the community to do physical activity and learn about nutrition and change their eating habits. WIL initiated the process and invited everybody to the table. My name is Nikki Hillier. I'm with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, and WIL is my source for keeping Champaign-Urbana families healthy.
2:42, you're listening to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Jeff Bossert. The name Stephen Tobolowsky may not mean much, but some of his nearly 200 film and TV characters have made a more lasting impression.
Phil? Phil? Hey! Phil Connors! I thought that was you. My, oh my, Phil Connors. Now, don't you say you don't remember me, because I sure as heck fire remember you. Well?
Ned Ryerson?
First shot right out of the box. So, how's it going?
Through small roles in films like the Bill Murray comedy Groundhog Day, Heard There, also Sneakers and Memento, and recent TV appearances in shows like Heroes and Glee, Stephen Tobolowsky has become a director's dream. The character actor now tells stories of his career and acting studies that include the University of Illinois through his own podcast. I recently spoke with Tobolowsky about what first attracted him to the field.
When I was a little kid, I loved monsters, particularly Frankenstein, Wolfman, Dracula, and most especially like Godzilla. And I thought that they were real, and dinosaurs were real, and I thought actors got to hang out with monsters all the time. Little did I know how truthful that statement was, but in a different way. But I thought if I became an actor, that I was around 5, 6 years of age, I would be able to hang out with Godzilla in real life. And of course, as I got older, just like people who play baseball or something like that, the more I acted, the more I realized I would not be able to hang out with monsters, and also that I was more and more incapable of doing anything else.
And how did you work your way into this niche, this character actor thing? Was there a point to where you realized, hey, I think I can make a career out of this?
I didn't get into the niche. The niche got into me. I think when I was studying, even at the U of I, I was thinking that what my career was going to be was like a serious, legitimate actor, the serious, legitimate stage on Broadway, and I would play romantic roles and all this kind of stuff. And then I started losing my hair. And when you lose your hair, you kind of start to go into that niche. I think that's the first part of your question. Is that physically, you know, when you lose your hair and you're tall or goofy looking, you become a character actor. The second part of your question is, how did I kind of make it a niche, or the niche make me? I was able to get more and more work because I had studied real acting and at the U of I and at SMU and had developed acting abilities at those places. And so I was able to be a team player. I could do drama, I could do comedy, Not a lot of people can do comedy, so that's always a commodity. I knew how to set up the joke, and I knew how to get the joke if I needed to. I knew how to do exposition if I needed to do that. I was a good team player. I was a good sixth man on a basketball team. You could send me in, and I could pass or block the shot, whatever you needed me to do.
You went to SMU, and when did you graduate from there?
Boy, 73.
So how long between there and coming to Champaign-Urbana?
I came to Champaign-Urbana, it looks like, probably at the end of 75 and through the summer of 76.
Well, you explained it in one of your podcasts. I mean, you pretty much needed another gig, and you were extended the invitation for you to come up here.
Well, yeah, it was. My girlfriend and I was very much in love, and being in love will really affect your life. Like, say you're an igneous rock, you fall in love, and you will become a metamorphic rock. You know, with enough heat and pressure, you will change your ways. And my desire to go to Broadway and be a babe on Broadway was mitigated by the fact that my girlfriend was not getting a lot of opportunities to act. Something like 22 graduate schools wanted me and like three wanted her. And then the head of the SMU theater department came up and said, "Stephen, why don't you and Beth come to the University of Illinois?" So I thought, well, I could stay here in Dallas and be a big fish in a small pond and hope that eventually I get some career going. Or I could continue my life with Beth, with Hob, our mentor, sort of, in a totally new place and go to school. And we did that. And, of course, as it turned out, you know, Beth ended up having, like, one of the greatest careers of anyone on Earth. And became world famous, and it just shows you how much other people know. We came to Illinois as just kind of really a last straw, as a matter of desperation of staying together and still working on theater together.
So tell me about your experience on campus. I mean, it certainly led to some interesting stories, as you've been telling us, internet, you know, people subscribing to your podcast.
It's funny, you know, when I started the podcast, which is the Tobolowsky Files, slashfilm.com wanted me to do a lot of movie stories because that's what people thought, but a story will become whatever it'll become. You know, you can't really control what you need to write about. In my days at Illinois, I never really had fashioned into a story until this podcast opportunity came up, and then I realized it was perfect for a story. Because when I was going into the U of I, going into Illinois, I thought, what the heck am I doing here? I hated school. I didn't have a great time in school. And now why am I doing more class scenes, more study of 18th century acting styles, more term papers? Why am I doing this? You know, I want to be in New York acting. As I look back now, I was completely misguided because the threads of everything that kind of made me successful and the threads of everything that kind of made me framed who I am today, I kind of learned at Illinois. But I was unaware of it at the time. Illinois taught me a lot of lessons about what is important and what is not important in being successful in show business. It taught me how to cope with failure. It taught me how to stick to my guns, regardless what the pressures were on the outside. It taught me that you could never finish the process of being a student. Are you on the campus of Illinois
now? Yes. Yeah, we're the NPR station on campus.
Fabulous. Here is a message that I learned at the University of Illinois. I want to send out to all the students out there at Illinois, and it's one of the most important things I learned there. I witnessed it with my own two eyes. There are two groups of people in the world. There are people who think they are masters, and there are people who think they're students. It's much better in life to be a student. And I saw so many of my compatriots at the University of Illinois, as soon as they graduated, as soon as they were going through graduate school, they shut down and they said, okay, I don't need to learn anymore. What the University of Illinois taught me is that to be successful, you have to continue learning your entire life. And that doesn't mean stay in school. Don't be a perpetual student. But it means when you get in the real world, you have to be a student of life, or the train will leave you at the station. And that is one of the most vital things I ever learned. I learned it at U of I.
You talked about being a student. I mean, and I look at some directors you worked with. I mean, Christopher Nolan, John Carpenter, Ridley Scott, Mel Brooks, Stephen Frears, just to name a few. Have you picked up some things from films you've made, or maybe some of the, you know, big name actors you've co-starred with?
Well, always. I mean, every film I learn something, and it's never the thing you think you're going to learn. In the most obvious sense of what you're talking about, when I was working on Mississippi Burning, I was supposed to be there for 2 weeks, and I ended up there for 10 weeks because a lot of my scenes, I was head of the Ku Klux Klan in that film, a lot of my scenes were exteriors, and we had a lot of thunderstorms moving through Mississippi. So just because of weather, I was hanging out a lot, and Alan Parker came up to me and said, "Stephen, I hear you're interested in directing. While you're hanging around, do you want to follow me around and watch me do what I do?" And I went like, "Oh, sure, yeah." I guess that happens all the time, that like one of the world's leading directors just says, "Follow me around." So I started following Alan around, and then after a couple weeks of going everywhere he went, watching him do something, he would turn to me all of a sudden and say, "How would you shoot this scene?" And I would go, "I would do this, 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 this." He goes, "Wrong. You would do this, 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 this." And it got more intense as it went along. I got to tell you, it was a life gift. And I was able to thank Alan years later. I was able to kind of hug him and thank him, not realizing what a great gift he had given me with the benefit of a life's knowledge. And I think I made him very angry. A lot of the lessons you learn are life lessons. And then in a silly way, in Bird on a Wire, I had to do a fight with Mel Gibson. And in Bird on a Wire, Mel says, "Stephen, do you do these fights a lot?" And I go, "No, sir." He says, "Well, I do. I do a lot of them. And let me give you a little advice. The main thing you have to remember is not to make punching sounds with your mouth, like going pow, 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 sha." Because as kids, as boys, he says, we always grow up and we pretend to fight. We make those noises. And I'll be damned. You know, we started fighting. We fought for about 10, 12 hours that day, pretend fighting. But you get tired, and suddenly, you know, Mel would go, "Yeah," or "Pow," or I would do it. We both just start laughing, and you learn odd things that way.
I would guess that the most recognizable role might be Groundhog Day.
Gotta be.
But do you have a favorite, one that maybe that stands out for you, that maybe you were able to show your talents in the most?
I am most proud. Oh, okay. Let's get it straight. I love Groundhog's Day. I love Ned. Ned's recognized all over the world. Great movie, great character. It's going to be a classic. But the role that I'm most proud of, believe it or not, is the role of Sammy Jenkins in Memento with Chris. That was the most difficult role I ever had. And the reason was I played someone with amnesia. And I never really realized it till I got on the set. But when you have amnesia, you don't really remember what you're doing. You can't remember. And the cornerstone of what an actor uses to survive is memory. It is his memory that brings him from point A to point B, from the beginning of the scene to the end of the scene. And so I had a choice because Chris wanted us to, quote, improvise and improvise dialogue, that I had to, on one part of my brain, not remember anything I did, and in the other part of my brain, remember everything I did so that when Chris moved in for coverage, I would be able to match it. And it was the most difficult challenge I ever had. And the film and Sammy survives very well under those conditions, and the film is just brilliant. So I'm very proud of that. That was the toughest thing I ever had to do.
Well, I got to mention Glee, because, I mean, I love the concept of, like, a musical TV show, and I know you're getting ready to shoot some more.
Yeah.
Do you get to sing and dance anymore?
That's a great question. You know, I did one. I did I Want to Sex You Up, and then I did a recording with Lea Michele of another number, which got cut from the show. So, of course, being an actor, I'm just assuming that I stunk, and I may have. But you know, I did a musical video the other night for the show with Leah, but they used me primarily for comedy and not for singing. So I don't know. It's an adventure. Glee is an adventure. First of all, Glee is not a normal show because so many of the people on Glee are Broadway actors. And so you really have this stage feeling doing Glee as opposed to a film feeling. Everybody is always working. Nobody is goofing off. Everybody is rehearsing and running to record their songs and doing dance rehearsals and getting off in a corner and practicing their dances by themselves. So it is really like doing a Broadway play every 10 days.
Ah, tick-tock, you don't stop.
Stop to the
ah, tick-tock, you don't stop.
Stop to the ah, tick-tock, you don't stop.
I know you're not going to sing that song.
This spring, character actor Stephen Tobolowsky can be seen in the Fox TV series Glee. He's also slated to appear in at least 9 films this year. And Tobolowsky's stories about his more than 30-year career can be downloaded for free on the Tobolowsky Files at slashfilm.com. A longer version of this interview will soon be on the Afternoon Magazine Archives on our website at will.illinois.edu.
Earth and Sky.
Thursday, March 25th, as darkness falls this evening, nearly everyone around the world should be able to find the planet Mars if your sky is clear.
We'll see Mars tonight as the closest star-like object to the moon. Although Mars looks like a star, it's really the fourth planet outward from our sun, and unlike the stars, which create light in their interiors, Mars shines by reflecting the sun's light.
Both Mars and the moon lie in front of the constellation Cancer, the Crab, tonight. The moon is in a waxing gibbous phase, and it's bright enough to wash many stars from the sky. That's why you might not see any of Cancer's stars. Cancer ranks as the faintest constellation of the zodiac, but you can see Mars tonight. It should be bold and bright enough tonight to withstand the lunar glare.
Cancer is a constellation of the zodiac. It belongs to that narrow band of stars that the sun, moon, and planets travel across our sky. If you could see stars in the daytime, you'd see the sun in front of Cancer from about July 20th till August 10th every year. The moon never stops moving in orbit around Earth, and by tomorrow, the moon will have moved out of Cancer and into the constellation Leo.
But Mars will remain in front of Cancer's stars as seen from our earthly perspective until May 12th. So look outside tonight for Mars near the moon. I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Joel Block. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Have you ever wanted to be somewhere where there's good company and good music, just to spend a little time whenever you get the urge? This is Vic DiGeronimo. Why not join me for Classic Mornings on WILL-FM, Monday through Friday mornings from 9 until noon? It's just what you were looking for, and you may stay as long as you'd like. Classic Mornings, beginning April 1st, right after Morning Edition on FM 90.9.
Meteorologist Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana tonight. In northwest Illinois, mostly clear. Elsewhere in the north and across central Illinois, clearing overnight in central Indiana and the south, cloudy, some rain, mostly before midnight. Lows will range from 20 in far northwestern Illinois to 35 in the far south and along the Chicago lakefront. Mostly sunny tomorrow. Highs will range from 43 in northern Indiana and northeastern Illinois to 53 in far southern Illinois. Champaign-Urbana, the remainder of today, cloudy tonight. A few lingering showers during the evening hours, then clearing.